The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Friday night once again, and it is the third, fourth? I don't know. Let me see here. Third night, Friday night. What is it, Harry? Is it the third or fourth Friday? The third Friday.
Yeah, I hope so, because Wednesday was the third Wednesday. And
you never know with these calendars, though. You never
know. I know.
They change.
I'm still fighting jet lag anyhow, so I'm not sure what hour, what day, what nothing.
No, I hear you. Harry Cooper is with us, and Harry is with us every month on the third Friday for a couple of hours. What we have done on this program, compliments of Harry Cooper and his extraordinary research, is literally put to rest many, many enormous lies and rumors stemming from World War II, perpetrated by you-know-who. And now we know for sure what happened to Adolf Hitler and his wife, Eva Braun. They didn't die in the bunker. If you choose to believe that, more power to you. But if you choose to believe that without reading the book, that makes you kind of foolish. Look at the facts and then make up your mind. Don't just make a knee-jerk emotional response, reaction, decision on what you've been brainwashed with your whole life. Because it didn't happen. Most of World War II, as you know it, is a lie. Oh, the figures and the battles are all true. But there are minutiae, and what's the opposite of minutiae? There are major events going on that we still don't know about, that are not out in the clear yet, but literally had enormous impact on your life today. And we are so grateful to be friends with Harry and have had him on this program and backed him and supported him and put bees under his bonnet. But boy, did he carry through. Hitler and Argentina, extraordinary book. All the books on sharkhunters.com are amazing. They're like reading living history. You really need to bring yourself, if you're new to this program, bring yourself up to speed about World War II and what happened. And what happened there ain't what they tell you in the books. All right? So what have you been doing, my friend?
Well, I just got back from Europe.
Yeah.
And met with a couple of our SIG agents. As you know, SIG, S-T-I-G, means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters,
uh-huh.
Intelligence Group. And one new fella, Captain Arturo Nemo, with a whole bunch of other names in the middle. You know how them Spaniards are. They got to be named after every relative.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Nemo had tracked the double of Hitler, tracked his family all the way back to 1696.
You're kidding me. He identified Hitler's double, tracked the family all the way to the 1600s. Well, what else would you expect from somebody named Captain Nemo?
Well, he tracked it all the way back to 1696 because that's where it intersected with the family of Adolf Hitler. And this double, according to what Captain Nemo, his explanation, this double had the same fire in his eye, or the same light, I'm sorry, the same light in his eyes as Hitler did. You know, they kept talking about Hitler's hypnotic eyes, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And the double had the same light in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And he also came from the same area of Austria and spoke the same unusual Austrian dialect
uh-huh.
as Hitler.
Uh-huh.
So,
how close was the physical resemblance, in your opinion?
Very close, but, you know, if you look at the picture Hitler patting the kid on the cheek there, the young kid, the Volkssturm there on late April.
Yeah.
If you know what to look for, you can see that really is not Hitler. You look at the ears, you look at various
Oh, no, that's when he's outside, and it's the last days of the Reich. And he's talking to the boys. You can look at him, and they try to say, look at what the stress of the war has done to this man. He hardly looks like himself. I've seen that written, that kind of thing. Well, he hardly looks like himself because it's not him.
He isn't himself. Yeah, himself was already gone. I think I told you on the last time I was on your program that from the 23rd of April on, none of the orders were signed by Hitler. They were signed by Bormann. So the reason they weren't signed by Hitler is because he wasn't there to sign them. And he was long gone, and then, you know, with his stopover in Spain. And we have reason to believe pretty solidly that he took Blondie with him.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So, you know, he got his whole family out, him and his wife and his dog. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people who say they believe Hitler had children. We don't know. We won't say yes. We won't say no.
Nor would you if you knew.
Well, I don't know. If we knew, we might, because another thing Captain Nemo told me over there, he tracked down Bormann's children for me.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And that information is going to a friend of yours and mine down in Buenos Aires when I go down there in July.
Mm-hmm.
Bormann was a busy guy. He had 10 kids, the oldest one of which has passed away since. But the other 9, I'm told, are still alive, and what the last name was, because they changed their last name for somewhat obvious reasons. And if I sound, you know, like I'm mentally incompetent during this broadcast, or if I hesitate a little before answering a question, I just brought back about 2 inches thick pile of documents from Germany and Austria, and I'm not quite sure yet, you know, what things I shouldn't bring up.
Correct.
So I'll pick my answers. I'll be like Barack Obama without a teleprompter. How's that?
Yeah, well, you'll do better.
Because
with your eyes shut.
Well, the nice thing about working without a teleprompter, if you're a liar like him, you stumble and stammer and you can't get anything right. You can always tell when he's lying, aside from the fact that his mouth is moving. But he always has that, he always, you know, he says a few words and then you get, so you know he's fixing to concoct another story. So, anyhow, I found a couple more super restaurants over there. I love going to Germany and Austria. Those are beautiful countries and the food is just super.
I wish I could go with you. I hear you.
Yeah, I know you said that. Well, that's okay. I'll think about you the next time I'm having a Schweinebraten in a beautiful four centuries old restaurant.
Well, I know you. Harry sent me a. It was a little stale, but it was a nice Entenmann's gift, and it was nice.
Yeah, Charlie Entenmann. He's been a member. Oh man, 10, 12, 15 years. And he's very supportive. We think Charlie Entenmann is a great guy. He's one of our 2 super angels. The other one's a fellow named Jack Goodyear. They help finance a lot of this expedition.
Uh-huh.
God
yeah.
bless them.
Yes,
we'd be
indeed.
In Hurt City without them.
Indeed.
So let's see, what else do we do down there? Also, God. Absolute, firm, solid, definite evidence of the political assassination of that Austrian strongman that I told you. had been a friend of mine from 1990 when we first met.
George Hyder.
That's him.
This is an outrageous... look, the enemy of humankind kills people all the time. They kill us, they kill our families, they kill anybody they need to. George Hyder, probably the most exciting young politician, leader, inspirational leader of Austrian politics, maybe of Austrian and German politics, since perhaps World War II.
He was an ass kicker. There's no two ways about that. And I think, well, I more than I think, I know what made him dangerous is that he was a patriot to his country, and he was so incredibly wealthy he couldn't be bought. So they did the next best thing, and they whacked him. And
I remember reading about that, and I just said, it made me sick.
Yeah.
I was watching his career. I knew what was going on. I don't know him. You were his friend. I didn't know him, but I could tell exactly what was going on and where this was going.
Yeah.
Look, when the Israelis go into downtown Tehran and kill nuclear scientists on motorbikes or cars, or in Iraq and Baghdad or wherever, they've killed these people off for years. There's really no one outside their reach. What they have gotten to is a point of sophistication of killing people that is plausibly deniable. It looked like an automobile crash.
Yeah.
It looked like it. It could be written up as an automobile crash, but it was murder.
I'm not saying who did it.
I am.
Well, you know, we have our suppositions who did it, but, you know, Hyder won a big election September of 2008, and he quickly said that he was meeting with the leader of the other right-wing party, and they were going to do three things. They were going to take Austria out of the European Union, which would have started dominoes. Then they said they were going to go off the euro, which is like their version of the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. Yeah.
And get onto the shilling. And he also said they were going to kick out all the Muslim freeloaders.
And he was going to restore Austria to its greatness, period.
He was, yeah.
That's all he was going to do, just bring the country back from death to life.
Yeah.
Extraordinary things, which I hope... Go ahead.
He didn't live 2 weeks after that. And the concocted story, you have to wonder if they've got trainee public relations people making up these things, like Lee Harvey Oswald shooting Kennedy in a rifle that he'd been better off throwing at him, or Patton being killed in a car wreck. But they said he was killed in a one-car accident. People weren't buying him. He was extremely popular. So they had no witnesses. We found a witness. This lady saw it. And she said he was speeding and he crashed. Okay, what was the lady's name? We don't know. Where does she live? Somewhere in Hungary. So obviously people weren't buying that. So then they said he was going twice the speed limit. Well, how do you know? These new cars don't have analog speedometers where the needle gets stuck. When they wreck, all the lights go off. So then they said, well, he was also twice the legal limit drunk. Well, how did they know? That kind of lab stuff can be tampered with. So then they finally said he spent the whole evening, or at least a whole hour, in a gay bar drinking with his gay lover. Well,
yeah,
that's baloney. I knew him. He wasn't gay. Plus, they said he consumed an entire bottle of vodka in 1 hour.
Uh-huh.
And then got out and went driving his car.
Right.
I can tell you from experience, way back in the old days, before I got my head out of my butt, I wanted to get out of a particular job, so I drank an entire fifth of Canadian Club inside of an hour. Thought it would make me too drunk. It darn near killed me. Laid me out. I couldn't think, move, do nothing for an hour. So the thought that he drank a whole bottle of booze and then got in his car and drove.
Well, it's obvious a murder. It's just a murder. It's just
plus
a murder.
The little town in which he allegedly crashed. Those little towns in Germany and Austria, they're nothing but a stretch of the road where they build houses on both sides. And here he's doing, allegedly, 140-something kilometers per hour, which is about 85. And the car crashed into a fire plug and then flipped end over end right through this whole little town. And nobody heard anything. Nobody turned on the lights. The fire plug, the fire hydrant, should have been spraying water by the thousands of gallons. Not a drop on the road. We got photos. That was what I went over to get, was these photos. And the road is dry. You snap off a fire hydrant, you got, what is that? That's about an 8-inch pipe under high pressure.
Something like that.
Yeah. And his arm was torn completely off, yet there was no blood in the car. You get your arm torn off, your brachial artery is about the size of your little finger, and it's pumping blood everywhere.
Yeah.
We have pictures of his car about a week before he his demise, and it's a brand new Volkswagen Phaeton. Now, not a Volkswagen, not a bug, but the Phaeton.
And this is a luxury car.
It's built on a Bentley frame. It's darn near armor-plated. It's got 22 airbags. Only two airbags deployed, I think. And in the picture, it's very clear. And you look at that, and you look at the picture of the car in the wreck. They got different wheels. So he must have known he was going to wreck the car, and he went out and changed the wheels.
Must have.
Yeah, and his car had just come out of service. It was a brand-new 2013. Had 30,000 kilometers on the odometer.
Uh-huh.
And the car that was wrecked was 5 years older and had 300,000 miles on the odometer. The doors were torn off by the
Ford. Wait a minute, are you saying they switched cars?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Remember Michael Hastings, the young journalist in L.A., who was all of a sudden driving right through stoplights at 90 miles an hour and killed himself after announcing he had something enormous on Obama? Same kind of thing. They can control these cars remotely.
I don't know about that, but this was a whole different car, and it looked like it was a wreck that had happened somewhere, and they came with the tow truck and put it there.
That's amazing.
The doors, the two
The pictures, if we look up George Hyder's death, the pictures of the car at the crash scene are not the Phaeton, not his Phaeton.
It's not the same car.
Oh, man.
And the pictures we have show the car in the wreck. That's what I say. You think they got first-year public relations students putting these stories together. We got a picture of the rocker panels. It's all laid up with rust.
Oh, God.
On
no
the wreck
way.
Car.
Are you going to write something up and put pictures with this so I can post it?
Oh, absolutely. I just got back.
I will put it up at the top. I'll put a picture of the car, split screen, at the top of my homepage.
And a bunch more pictures, too.
All right. Well, I'll take care of it.
Okay. And, the doors, the two left side doors. This is an interesting thing. According to the story, he slammed into the fire plug and something else big. Made out of steel with the right side of his car.
Right.
But the right side has no damage at all. The left side is torn all to pieces. The left doors were allegedly torn off the car, but you look at the photos I got, you can see where they were flame cut with a torch.
Holy shit. Excuse me.
And
this is disgusting. I knew it was bad, but this is really bad.
You have to wonder about the mentality of the people that put this together.
Well, I'm going to...
And there's more that I know I'm not supposed to say right now.
All right. Well, we need to honor this man. I will do my best.
He was a good man. He cared about his country. And from a personal standpoint, I take history groups there every September. And as a matter of fact, your listeners can go on sharkhunters.com and look under news for the details on our next trip coming up in September. But whenever we would go there every year, we'd wind up in Austria. He would be having some kind of a big celebration or a meeting or something. He always made sure that my group got an invitation to his shindig. And we got pictures of him and my wife and my daughter standing together. You know, he was just a nice guy. But he wanted to bring Austria back to what it was, and he was so damn wealthy he couldn't be bought. So, like the drug cartels like to say, we'll pay you off in silver or lead. And he got the lead. So I'll be writing stuff up, but my schedule is absolutely nuts right now. I just got back from Germany and Austria, and next Thursday, I leave for that shindig in the Ozarks, where I'll be speaking on Hitler's escape again, and selling our books. And I get back from that. Then in June, I'm going back to Germany to meet with people again, plus I'm having dinner with the...
Okay, welcome back, and yours truly is on the telephone. We had a massive power outage here. I don't know how far it goes, but I can't see a light on anywhere. So we are in the dark. The phone still works, which is a good sign. We've been talking with Harry Cooper about George Haider's murder in Austria, and really a rather sloppy job of covering it up. We will be bringing you a picture story of it in the days to come. Harry will put it together. And you were over there primarily to look into what, Harry? What were you doing over there besides looking into George's terribly untimely death?
Yeah, well, Haider, of course, Jorg is the way you pronounce that one, Jorg Haider.
Yeah.
Of course, that, and also more on the people in the book, Hitler in Argentina. You remember, well, you read the book, there was a fella named Colonel Willie Oberbeil.
Uh-huh.
In the book, who was Don Angel's boss. And Don Angel, for your listeners just tuning in, Don Angel was a spy working for the German government, and he spent the last 3 or 4 months of the war in the Führer bunker, and every day he had to give a report to Hitler. So he was part of the inner workings, and he saw Hitler forcibly drugged under orders of Martin Bormann and removed from the Führer bunker. And his
people, there was something I sent it to you. You may have been out of the country. Someone who was his bodyguard for the last 4 or 5 years said he was in there and saw them being carried out, saw their feet sticking out under blankets.
Mm-hmm.
And but he said that they were dead, of course.
Yeah, but whose feet?
Well, they take this loyalty business very seriously in World War II Germany, and they take it to the grave.
They do, indeed.
Yeah. Very few have ever broken the vow of silence it's a code of ethics. And
honor.
Anyway, he did say he saw them being carried out, and then he went through the old canard of saying, well, we went up and we put them in a pit and we burned them with petrol.
Yeah.
Well, that's simple drama. And that's what they do.
Yeah, that's for sure. But that and, like I say, Willie Oberbeil, I just had the documents, the files in my hand literally 1.5 minutes ago as I was moving. I'm in my office now as I was moving them off the floor onto one of the desks. When I come back from overseas, I just throw everything out on the floor and start sorting it that way. And all of a sudden, one of my agents found all these. They're still listed as either secret or top secret. Let me take a look. Secret. They're still classified as secret. And it tracks Willy Overbile from his birth in Munich to his retirement after the war in Munich. And then he finally died. I forgot how long ago. Like I say, I'm just familiarizing myself with it right now.
Right.
So that was, those were the big things. And like I say, I was setting up an arrangement to meet and have dinner with the daughter of a very, very high-ranking member of the Third Reich. I don't think I should mention the lady's name.
No, no need to. Did you have dinner with her?
No, she was not feeling well. She's, you know, not a kid. And so I'm going back. Going back in June.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I say, my days are pretty well scrambled.
You're going back to see her?
Yeah, that's the primary reason, plus also more information as well. I'm stumbling and mumbling while I'm talking to you because I'm trying to pull up my file.
Oh, take your time. Take your time.
I'm trying to pull up my file on Hyder.
Uh-huh.
And I had a problem while I was gone. Somebody somehow had modified the documents in my computer, and nobody can get to these documents. Nobody is on the computer except me. Nobody has a password.
They can remotely access it.
Oh, they sure can. So bless their hearts. But I've got all the photos saved.
Yeah.
Nice thing about having so many computers in the office. I've got stuff on umpty zillion computers.
Uh-huh.
And, let's see. Uh-oh, it says here, you can't open a file because it's been damaged. Not decoded correctly. Oh, well, anyhow. But I've got all the photos saved on another, on another computer that doesn't go to the internet.
Right, good.
And any order processing we do with the credit card numbers, that's on a computer that's not even connected to the internet. It's not possible because the thing belongs in the Smithsonian. I've got an old IBM 386 that went out of style back, I think, in the Truman administration. So anyhow, I'm going back there in June to get more information and to speak with that lady. And because that way you speak to the people who were there and you can get them through history.
Of course. Tell me what you can about the. It's still a rumor and it rattles around here and there that Hitler and Eva had a child or children. It's very, very well kept secret to this day, for the most part. And
right. Like I say, I can't comment yay or nay. I've heard the stories that they had children. I've heard stories they did not have children. I've heard stories they've had a boy and a girl, or they've had two girls, or this or that.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, I can't say because I just don't know. And if I don't
I don't want to push anywhere, but the idea is that the children were born before the end of the war and were also removed from Germany safely.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we got also. Incidentally, on my other computer, my Hyder files are opening perfectly. Yay!
Mm-hmm.
So,
good.
Including the photos and the text. one of the people who was close to him was a skydiver. That's just dumber than hell if you're in that kind of business. But
that's dumber than hell time.
Yeah, dumber than a box of rocks. And this guy was going skydiving with his club. They threw all their gear onto the airplane. They got on the airplane, went up and away. They just, everybody grabbed a chute. He got somebody else's chute, and he's floating down gently in the parachute when he sees the guy that got his chute going past him at about 120 miles an hour with a what they call a Roman candle. Splat.
Yeah.
Then this guy doesn't have enough sense to try a different hobby. He goes back up the next week, and that week he got his correct parachute, and he Roman candled all the way down. Splat. They said he looked like a starfish when he hit.
Yeah, well, that's double dumb.
Yeah, I agree.
Good God.
If you're in a situation where you think you're going to be targeted...
Yeah. Well, you don't really give them a second chance. Come on. If you're up...
I know. God gave him his life back after that first shot, but...
Yeah. Well, crazy. Hold on a minute. We have to pause. Harry, we'll come right back.
Okay.
With Harry Cooper in just a minute. Okay, and we're back, Jeff, with Harry Cooper. Major power outage here in our area, here on the West Coast, at least in this portion of, well, as far as I can see, I don't see any lights on. So we're on the telephone, and Harry is in Florida, just back from Europe. We've been talking about some very interesting things. What else do we stand at this point in time, Harry, to uncover and to find out? I mean, you look at the classics about Borman, the whole thing about Hess being sent on a peace mission, spending most of the rest of his life in prison, then having his neck broken by the SAS before he was talk of releasing the old man. He knew too much. His family knows what happens, and there are big issues. How many more do we expect we have a chance to unravel fully? Kind of a tough question, but what do you think? Oh, Harry, are you there or are you gone?
Yeah, good question.
Oh, well, you sound like you're there.
I'm still alive. And
yeah, well, you're tired. Listen, seriously, what else do we, what else would you like to find out? Who else would you like to talk to? And who else would you like to be able to sit down with and get the, these people are not all going to take it with them. Some are going to talk.
Yeah, but the ones that have given an oath, they probably are not going to break the oath. That's just the way they are. They're honorable. And even though the government, the German government some years ago, came out with a law that says any oath they took to the former government, the Hitler government, is null and void, they don't see it that way. They take an oath. They believe it. And
It was a moral, spiritual, the highest level oath a human being can give, and
right.
they did absolutely adhere to it. And I'm just wondering, what do you think we might find out? What kinds of things?
They keep rearranging the deadline for release of information. There was stuff supposed to be released after 50 years out of the archives, and that got kicked up to 75 years. Which is 5 years from now, then in the British archives, there's stuff that has been ordered sealed forever. I don't know. I think we can unravel it. But the unfortunate thing now, Jeff, nobody cares. When we first came out with this book, Hitler in Argentina, which you read it, it really shakes the history that we're taught in school.
Absolutely.
And you'd think people would be jumping through hoops. And people who read it are very impressed. But when I tell people about it, you know, the younger people, oh, yeah, he got away. Well.
Mm. They don't. Oh, Harry, they don't care.
No.
They don't know. They don't care. They never will. They have been dumbed down.
Yeah.
And literally, they've been basically spayed and neutered intellectually. They don't care.
Well, also look at it. Give them a break. It's ancient history.
Can't blame them at all for that. It is.
Right.
But if they could just understand that where we are today is directly connected to where people were then, and that's the value of history.
Right. They don't see the connection.
No.
You know,
the people
anything like that about World War II. Oh, Adolf Hitler, he was a madman. He wanted to kill all the Jews. They had all these gas chambers, and Hitler was a lunatic. He wanted to rule the world, and, you know, that just...
You know, it's funny when you ask them that, then ask them, can you define what AIPAC is?
Mm-hmm.
What's AIPAC?
Well, yeah, and not only that, if you watch Waters World, you know, that one on Fox, he was asking questions about World War II. These people had college students. They had no idea what the hell he was talking about.
No, none.
There was a survey done some years ago, college students, about, and one of the questions was, what prompted the United States to get into World War II? And 30% said it's because Germany attacked our fleet at Pearl Harbor.
Germany attacked
the fleet at Pearl Harbor, they said.
Well, God.
And the interesting thing, when I get into a discussion with somebody I think has half a brain, you know, they look a little befuddled, and I tell them, hey, look, Japan attacked us, so we retaliate by attacking Germany? Does that make sense? And they scratch their head, and I tell them, hey, look, if you punch me in the mouth, I'm not going to go punch out your buddy. I'm going to beat the snot out of you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know, but nothing. I didn't read it. I lived it. I was a kid in the war.
They don't understand. When Germany lost the war, we lost our way of life, our culture. We lost our freedom. We lost our constitution. Ultimately, this is what happened.
Pretty well going downhill at that time.
That's right.
But
the fabulous 50s and then the 60s began its slide. And where we are now is on the other side of the ledger. We are in pitch black Marxist, Bolshevist, pedophilia, satanic evil. That's who is controlling this country.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. And in my humble opinion, which, as you know, ain't humble.
No, but it's damn refreshing. Please.
Thank you. All this is done to deliberately tear the fabric of who we are.
Right.
How was Germany able to accomplish these things? Such a small country, a little country, 90 million people, that's all. How could they do it? Because they were one people. They were not black and white and brown and red and feminist and liberal and conservative and gay and straight and lesbian. They were one people. And now the press is trying to do the same thing with Vladimir Putin. They're saying he's a madman. He's not a madman. I met Putin a few years ago. I spent a half an hour with him. He's not a madman.
Well, we need to remember that the press is dead. Basically just a Zionist propaganda organ. That's all it is. The reporters are all either directly or indirectly controlled by the alphabet letter agencies.
Yeah.
They do what they're told. They read their script. And
that's it. Yeah, unfortunately,
they don't do any
that's
reporting.
The case. The idea of an investigative journalist, that's pretty rare nowadays.
Right.
And those who are, does the name Andrew Breitbart come to mind?
Yeah. Well, they kill people, as I said. Lots of them.
Well, I don't want to be one of them dead guys.
No, and I'm very lucky I'm not. I don't know why. Somebody's protecting me somehow.
Well, you're out in the sticks. Well, of course, that makes you an easy target, too, doesn't it?
It's so easy to take somebody. It doesn't matter where they are. It's easy.
One of our members is retired U.S. Army colonel, military intelligence, and he says, Harry, if they want you dead, you're dead. So my thinking is, or my insurance, or whatever you want to call it, I put all the sensitive stuff on all sorts of stick drives and pass them around to people and say, hey, in case I commit suicide or have a car wreck, or die from beriberi.
Yeah.
Look at what's in here and send it to the proper people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can get it all, but I don't think they can stop all those stick drives from getting out. I came back from Europe with stick drives hidden in everything, with photos on all of it, and also, you know, emailing the photos home.
They didn't catch any of them, I'll bet.
I was really surprised. I thought I was going to be intercepted at least by the police, by the BND, Bundesnachrichtendienst. As I was ready to get on the plane in Atlanta for the overwater hop, all of a sudden, my seat was changed.
Mm-hmm.
I fly a lot. I've never had my seat changed unless they're going to be nice and put me up.
That scares me. It sounds like getting your parachute changed.
Well, plus, once I sat down in the new seat, there was this very nice, very intelligent lady sitting there, and she seemed to know an awful lot of stuff about the things I do. I mean,
funniest thing.
But
what a coincidence.
Yeah, what a coinky-dink.
Yeah.
So I was careful, and, you know, she's asking questions, and I'm answering, but then she gets on to the Holocaust question. I tell her, hey, look, I'm an expert on Hitler's escape. I'm a world expert on U-boat history. I'm not an expert on that, so I ain't saying nothing. Because that's all you got to do is deny that while you're over in Europe. Bam, you're in jail.
Yeah.
That's 3 years in prison. So I just...
So this happened on a flight in Germany?
Yeah, just a week and a half ago when I was going over.
Well, they were setting you up.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all you had to do is say, well, that's all bullshit, it never happened, and you probably wouldn't be on the phone right now.
Oh, I'm sure I wouldn't. If I said that, you know, they get you. That's 3 years. And the interesting thing, I've seen some of their trials. The judge acts like a very vigorous prosecuting attorney. The judge, he's supposed to weigh things evenly. I mean, that's the way we're used to it in this country.
No,
they get really hostile.
I'd rather go in front of a computer, a programmed
yeah.
computer, and put the data in and let the computer decide.
Mm-hmm. Just remember, the computer only decides what is programmed to decide.
Of course, the programmer is the problem, too. So,
yeah.
You know, you really can't win anymore.
That's the old, when the computer thing first came out, I was a young executive with Motorola way back a million years ago. And they had a term, GIGO, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing, you know, you set it up to look at things the way you want the computer to look at things, not necessarily fairly, but however you want it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I guess the only fair judge is God once you're dead. I don't want to meet that guy yet. Later, not now. And, you know, at 75 years old, I'm in great physical shape. Nobody believes I'm 75. I don't have any physical ailments.
No, you're amazing. It's the Entenmann's diet.
Is that what it is?
Sure it is.
I know. I just had 3 donuts before I got on the air with you.
Good man. I think it's time for our break at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Again, I'm sitting in the dark here, literally no electricity, so I'm on the telephone. But I do hear music in the background. So, do you hear music?
Harp music.
Can you hear music?
Nope.
Yeah, you hear music, don't you?
Okay, if you say so.
Oh, I don't know. I hear music, and it's not harp music, so that's good.
Well, maybe.
All right, I think we're
going to
take a break here. If not, there'll be some dead air. So, Todd, it's up to you. I hear music. I think we're going to take our top of the hour break. So we'll try, and we'll be back with Mr. Cooper in just a couple minutes.
Stay away from the windows.
Indeed. All right, let's get right to it. Hour number 2, Jeff Renz with Harry Cooper. Jeff is on the telephone tonight. If the vocal quality is not as it normally is, we'll be back on the air here with the regular microphone and ISDN line, hopefully, any minute. We'll see. Boy, when it gets dark out there, no light. It's dark.
You did pay your electric bill, didn't you?
I think.
Well, I don't know. You were hearing music a little while ago.
Well, I hear things. Okay. So, Germany. Your book's in German. any chance of Hitler in Argentina?
Being translated?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all, as far as languages, you know, it's been available in French for quite a while. As a matter of fact, I just got an email from the publisher yesterday saying they're going to send me my first royalty check, and I told them okay, and I told them where to send it, and I haven't heard back from them, but, and the daughter of one of our Sieg agents, Michael Ivanheim, has just finished translating the book into Spanish. And as soon as I get done running around, I'll send that off to be published. And I've got two potential translators and publishers in Germany who say they want to publish it or to print it and translate it to German, but they got cold feet, too. That makes brings it to
well, I can,
eight or nine.
Yeah, you can understand. The other question I have is if they translated into German,
yeah,
outside of Germany, let's say it wasn't available in Germany, couldn't Germans just buy it from Austria or Spain or something?
Well, getting it translated outside of Germany is not a big deal, but I'm finding that we may have trouble getting it shipped in, and I don't know if I want to be getting personally involved with the distribution, because
no, let them handle it.
That's right, because you know, then let them take the heat from the from the government. But you know, we'll get it done. We'll get it done, and I'll get it published.
You know, I think honestly think that the word is out by now, and most Germans who care about this kind of thing have certainly heard of the books, if not your book, the books that have been ripped off from yours. I wonder, are any of those, The Grey Wolf or whatever it was, are those translated into Germany?
I don't believe so,
German?
No. Nope, that one and a guy named Noam Shalev from Israel, who copied from my book and also copied from Grey Wolf. I don't believe his is available in German either.
Okay.
However, we have just gotten the basic outline of how we can ship out of the United States. Right now, if we ship out of the United States any of our books to any country out of the United States, the cost is incredible for shipping. It's like $40-$45 shipping per book,
which
is nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But
plus all the forms you have to fill out.
Yeah. We're finding there's a way we can do it for maybe $20 shipping. So we're investigating that, and we should have an answer within a week or two. And if it's viable, we'll make it available. If people want to pay the extra $20 for shipping, fine.
Yeah.
Way back in the old days, my magazine was all hard copy paper. That was before the advent of the Internet, et cetera. And we could send the magazine anywhere in the world. I think it was $1.82, about $1.82 shipping, which you can live with that. Now it's $6 and over, so we don't even offer the option to send our magazines out of the country hard copy. Anybody can get it anywhere in the world electronically. As a matter of fact, if your listeners want to send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, just say they listened to the program tonight and they'd like a free copy of the magazine, no problem. We'll fire off the electronic copy to them immediately, no charge, no strings attached. And
it's a wonderful magazine. I hope you do get it, folks. It's really special.
Yeah, we'd like to hear from people, because this is history that needs to be told. About half the magazine is U-boat history, and half the magazine is spookery. You know, we're right now running a section on the Third Reich in Argentina. You know that. You get the magazine. And, excuse me, and then the stuff that I'm picking up from our spooks, incidentally, for those who are not informed, spooks means spies, agents. We're putting that stuff in there, too. And the next one that comes out, number 271, that I'm working on right now, that'll have the lineage of Hitler's double in it. All the way back to 1696, where his lineage and Hitler's actual lineage cross.
How many pictures, photos of the two of them are there, and how active was the double in appearing in public?
I don't think the double had much of a role except in the last few weeks.
That's why, again, I go back. If you look at Hitler in the last few weeks, it doesn't look like him.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like him, but it's not. It's clearly, it's not a question of stress. I mean, it's not the same guy.
No, yeah, it's not the same guy. That's exactly the point. So it's not like some of the other doubles, like Stalin had a double, Roosevelt, Churchill.
They all had doubles.
Right, and they were in public quite a bit. For instance, during the Yalta conference, everybody saw Roosevelt in the Rose Garden, yet he wasn't there. He was in Yalta.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, they only found him in 1944. So, and by that point in the war, you know, the top brass knew, and even the frontline soldier pretty well figured they were going to lose.
Yeah.
So then that's when they got this guy. We named him in the last issue, and anybody who asks for the free issue, they'll get the current issue, number 270,
mm-hmm.
And that identifies him. But in the next one, 271, we go into depth. One other thing that I got from Captain Augusto Garcia Mendoza, whatever, Nemo,
mm-hmm.
there was a big mansion, like a castle, on one of the islands, one of the Canary Islands. Belonged to a German guy named Winter,
mm-hmm.
properly pronounced Winter.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Nemo just showed me the area that was cut off for, you know, thousands of acres around here that was off limits to Spanish subjects. And the Canary Islands are a possession of Spain, yet only Germans could be there. And prior to the war, there were 300 to 400 Germans of the Arbeitsdienst,
uh-huh.
the Workers' Corps, there. They were digging tunnels. And when Captain Nemo asked his source what were the tunnels for, they were for fishing. Right, tunnels that you could bring jeeps through.
This is in the Canaries now. They were digging tunnels.
That is correct.
In this partitioned area of one of the larger Canary Islands.
Yeah, I think it was Fuerteventura, but I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to open the map right here because it'll take me until dawn to get the damn thing folded up again.
Yeah.
Also, there was a harbor there. I don't remember which one it was. But
what year would this have been?
Well, the one for the section that was shut off was all during the war and for some time after.
Uh-huh.
But now, according to my source, the tunnels have all been dynamited shut. And there was one that was still open to the sea, and some guys came along in a boat. The diver went down and went in and didn't come out. So, probably not a good place to be. Then
well, what possibly could have been in these tunnels? Was this a supply?
Yeah,
command and control?
That's what we're thinking. We don't know for sure yet,
uh-huh.
but we're going to find out. We just got a new member.
You know, if they dynamite the tunnels closed,
yep.
you can excavate, get right back on in there.
Well, yeah, if it takes more than just a GI and trenching tool.
Yeah.
But,
well, anyway, these things, they don't blow the entire tunnel up. They just
blow the entrance,
up.
That's all.
Yeah. Well, there's treasures out there to be found.
Okay, here we are. I unfolded the map. I hope you're happy.
All right.
If I can't get a damn thing folded up again, I'll just crunch it.
I'm sorry.
No, cut it out.
That's call your wife.
Southwestern corner, southwestern end of the island of Fuerteventura.
Okay.
And looking at the, well, that's 10 kilometers. Bingo, 10 kilometers from the mansion to the point, 10 kilometers there, and then if you go to the east, there's 10, 20, 30, 40 kilometers to the border, and then, so he had a total of 50 kilometers long, Then over on the island of Gran Canaria, by the port of Las Palmas, we list 6 U-boats that came in there to pick up fuel, water, supplies, et cetera, from the German tanker. What the heck? Well, I'll have to...
So it was a refueling resupply station during the war.
Yeah, and many years ago, when we were first getting started, I got a copy of a memo from the FBI to Army Intelligence that was sent to me by Charles Higham, who also died a couple of years ago under mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, I read several of his books.
Yeah,
Charles.
He was world renowned as being in depth and accurate. So anyhow, he sent me this memo from the FBI to the Army, stating that 6 fuel tankers of the Standard Oil fleet were making the run from Aruba in the Dutch West Indies to the Canary Islands, where they were refueling into German tankers in the early stages of the war, either just before we got into
stuff.
It or...
Yeah,
and you'll remember that the U.S. passed a law saying that no American flag ships could help Germany, so they reflagged their ships Panamanian. They were gonna make their money. Remember this Senate report that Higham also sent me way back. Oh man, it had to be 25-30 years ago. Of the Senate subcommittee headed up by Harry Truman, they brought out the fact that Standard Oil of New Jersey supplied the fuel to the Luftwaffe when they were bombing England, supplied fuel to the RAF when they went up into combat, and supplied fuel to the Japanese when they came to bomb Pearl Harbor, and they fueled everybody all during the war. So
sounds like a damn conspiracy to me, Harry.
I hate to use that term, but the Seven Sisters, as they call them, Texaco, Standard Oil, Shell, which was not an American company, Humble Oil, etc., they were selling to everybody. There was a bull.
That's why war is such a wonderful profit engine.
Yeah, I can't think of a single war that was fought for any reason other than money.
Money. Ask, General Smedley Butler, he wrote it all in the 1930s in that book of his, War is a Racket. That's all it is.
Yeah.
We look at Ukraine, and they're not just poking the bear with a stick. They're stabbing the bear.
Yeah.
They're trying like hell to get something going there, major ground war.
Yeah.
And it may be worse than that. If they try to take Crimea back, it'll be a nuclear war. There's no question.
Yeah. And if you read your news hotmail we sent out today, Russian submarine patrols have more than doubled from a year ago. Russia has secret submarine bases now in, where was it? I don't have it in front of me. Norway or Finland or someplace up there.
Well, their whole North fleet is on high alert, and it has been enlarged and enhanced.
Oh, it
and
has.
It
indeed.
Is apparently of great concern to the Pentagram. They're very concerned about
the
it.
Pentagram, okay, that's cute.
Well, it's the truth.
So they're all looking at the northern hemisphere. They're all, you know, which is valid concern. But they should look at the southern hemisphere. Chinese carrier pilots are being trained by the Brazilian Navy, by their carrier pilots. Because Brazil has one serious navy. Boy, they got a huge navy. I was down there a couple of years ago. Just
I didn't know. I had no idea.
They got carriers. They've got fast frigates, German-built submarines, and I was in a huge navy base, and it was the second largest navy base where I was. I wasn't even in their biggest one.
Well, I also suspect that the Brazilians have at least reasonably small tactical nuclear weapons. They might have large ones.
I don't know for sure, but...
Well, they've got nuclear power plants there, and they make deals with whomever.
Well, Putin and Russia just built two more nuclear power plants down in southern Patagonia of Argentina, and...
Now, that I don't understand. When Ted Turner and all the rich elite are down there, when the Jews are down there in such incredible numbers, the Zionist Jews, clearly trying to make a place for a new Israel if they have to, who's building nuclear power plants down there with their endless problems, which will last forever? It's nuts. I don't get it.
The government down there is having a problem. I know Christina is having to fight runaway inflation.
She's in Argentina.
Right.
I'm talking about Brazil.
Oh, okay, Brazil. I don't know.
Now, who has the big navy? Brazil.
Brazil, yeah. Oh, yeah, Brazil. Boy, they got a serious navy.
But why would Christina build two nuclear power plants in the Patagonia? I don't understand that.
I don't know, but the Russians built them for her.
Yeah, I got it.
And from what my people tell me, they've discovered oil down there way south, which is another reason why the Falkland Islands, the Islas Malvinas, that's another choke point down
there.
Well,
Christina has leased a number of Russian combat jets. They didn't buy them, they leased them. So they've upgraded their aerial protection profile quite a bit, and the British are not happy about it. Do you foresee any possibility that Argentina might try to take the Falklands back?
I don't know. Right now they're having so much problem down there. When I was down there last year, of course, I always walk to the Plaza de Mayo, which is a beautiful plaza, a huge, big circular plaza in front of the Casa Rosada, the government house. And it's beautiful, with a big circular walk about 50, 60 yards diameter, and grass all around it. Well, last time I was down there last year, my God, every blade of grass, every square inch of grass had tents on it or people sleeping out, signs everywhere. They're protesting everything, marching around in front of the government house down there. A lot of it was the veterans of the Falkland Islands War, but not the combat veterans. The combat veterans get some kind of a pension, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, I don't know.
Right.
But these are the veterans who got called into the war also, but didn't have to go fight. They got pulled out of Buenos Aires.
I read the story. I ran it. Yeah.
Yeah, and down to, the base at General Belgrano Navy Base as supply people, et cetera. They want a pension now, too.
So, well,
I don't know if you can get people to actually go to fight. But if you did, what's the British going to respond with? They don't have any aircraft carriers anymore. They got rid of all their Harriers. They've got.
That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
I don't think tactically the British would have much of a chance, short of a threat of a nuclear attack on Argentina and Buenos Aires, to keep the Falklands in their possession.
Right.
Should Argentina decide to take them.
And that, well, of course, the new British submarines that are so super sophisticated, they can sit in the English Channel and hear a ship in New York Harbor, but they can't keep from crashing into the bottom of the ocean with these super technical things. Their first one, it wasn't out 6 months, and it crashed the damn thing into a rock outcropping underwater that somehow they just didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So the West has just cut back so drastically. The United States couldn't help England if the Falklands blew up again. And I don't think under this clown in the White House, I don't think they would. I really don't know. I don't know. It would be interesting to find out. I'd hate to see that kind of
work. From what I can gather, there is a tremendous amount of activity in South America. from rich people, the so-called elite, buying places, having planes on standby to fly them down there should things get real bad up here, which they could. And Ted Turner has sold pieces of his enormous spread of land to other Hollywood types so they can go in and build a 5 or 10 acre place, and they'll be able to have something to go to as well. So this is a big, it's a growth industry down there.
Yeah, and the Yankee dollar is so powerful, so strong against the Argentine peso right now.
Mm-hmm.
Legally, at the bank, you can get 8.5 pesos to the dollar, but on the street, you can get 15 pesos to the dollar.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, so, and the inflation, though, I'm told, is about 40%. They had a major upheaval, oh man, what was it, 20, 30, 40 years ago, something like that, when the inflation was way beyond what it is now. Some woman was buying a pack of gum, I guess, and she got upset because the pack of gum cost her the same as her car cost her a year before.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there, it's a beautiful country. I really like Argentina, but they got a problem. They got they lost a case in international court that they have to pay $70 billion to some Wall Street hedge fund that apparently borrowed the money. And
that was not too long ago, in fact.
Right. And they had their flagship of their Navy, which was a beautiful big square rigger. They had that thing seized in Niger or one of the West African ports and held. Somehow they got it back, and now they're on training cruises up the Pacific coast of South America where they ain't going to get grabbed again. I was on board that ship a year ago.
Yeah. All right, hold on. I hear music. That means we have to pause with Harry.
Right.
We'll come right back and wrap it up with our last segment in just a few minutes. Hang on. That is that night tonight, talking about a lot of interesting things historically and otherwise. I'm on the telephone right now. Our power is out in this particular area in Oregon, and hopefully it'll come back on. I see lights in the distance now, so they have restored some of the power. So they're perhaps working their way this way. So if I sound a little odd, of course I always sound a little odd, it's the phone. All right, Harry, what's on tap in terms of the next patrols? When are your next trips? I want to make sure everybody knows so they can sign up now. Because these trips that Harry takes are once-in-a-lifetime events. You'll never be the same. You will literally have learned things that no one else could avail you of.
Yeah, our next one is this September, the last 2 weeks in September, which actually rolls over to the first few days of October. We start out in Munich, and we tour some of the historical buildings from the Reich. We have lunch at the Hofbräuhaus, where, if you remember the old films of Hitler making his speeches, the third floor of the Hofbräuhaus is that hall. It can seat 800 people, so we can see that. Then we go up to Nuremberg, and we go to the party rally grounds, and most likely we'll go past the sign that says Ein Gang Verboten, which means shark hunters are welcome.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, into the stadium where the golden room where the ceiling is still inlaid with gold designs and the swastika.
Are they taking care of the stadium?
No. No. They were letting everything fall apart, and then just a couple of years ago, they passed a new law that said these various places, like the stadium, are historic places and cannot be torn down, but they haven't found a way to fund the maintenance. They figure it's going to take 70 million euros, which is about $100 million, just to keep it from falling apart.
Well, obviously worth it. I mean, they got the Colosseum. This was another momentous event. That stadium signified a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yeah, and its history. So we see that in Nuremberg. We visit some other famous places in Nuremberg. We also enjoy the old city because our hotel is literally across the street from the from one of the gates into the old city.
Uh-huh.
And it's like walking back into a history book. But then we go from there down to southern Austria for the high point of our whole patrol. We spend two nights, I think it is, Friday and Saturday night in fellowship gathering with a bunch of the veterans, hundreds of veterans from Germany, some from France, some from Netherlands, etc. And then on, I think it's the Saturday or the Friday, we take a three-hour cruise on the beautiful Werthersee Lake, and just to take pictures and to enjoy life.
Nice.
Saturday, I think afternoon, we go. We're guests of the their version of a Navy League club. It's the Marina Kameradschaft, or the and only by invitation.
Mm-hmm.
For just fellowship and fun with, I don't know how they fit all those people in that room, but they do. And Sunday is the high point of the whole tour. It's the Ulrichsberg Memorial, where we go to the top of this high mountain where there's a destroyed church and a huge cross, and they remember and memorialize everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform, no matter what flag. To my knowledge, it's the only one in the world where they remember everybody, not just their own soldiers.
Agreed.
But everybody.
We've had pictures of that on the program before.
Right.
You can see them if you go back and look at Harry's earlier appearances. It's quite a beautiful event.
Yeah.
A question. There was, I don't know what the ratio was, but wasn't it something like during the war, every 2 square feet or 1 square foot of habitable building above ground, there was something like 2 square feet of habitable underground tunnels, huge things.
Actually,
in other words,
four times as much.
Was it four?
Yeah, that's what I read.
It's two, it doesn't matter. It's huge. And are all of these things known? Are some of them lost? Are they explored?
Yes, all of the above. Yes, there are some that nobody remembers. Yes, there are some that have been bulldozed shut. There's a huge, big complex under the town of Hallein, Austria, and I asked the city authorities if I could have permission to go in there. I'm a reporter, I'm a historian, and they said, no, it's too dangerous. Well, it's not too dangerous. They just don't want anybody digging into that history. And the city of Hallein, or the town of Hallein, which now, unfortunately, is about 60 or 70% Muslim, that's the home of the guy.
I mean, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
That's the home of the guy that wrote the Christmas carol, Heilige Nacht, Stille Nacht, otherwise known as Silent Night, Holy Night. Yeah. So, and then there's others. One of our spooks who can't even talk to me anymore, he's with what you might call Odessa. His boss has told him can't talk to me anymore. But he's got it set up to where we can go into a bunker complex that nobody gets into.
Uh-huh.
Also, when we're in Berchtesgaden, which is where Hitler had his other home, the Berghof, up on the over Salzburg.
Favorite home.
Yeah, I know. It used to be a beautiful place, but Bomber Harris bombed it, I think, about a week before the war ended. did
like it was necessary.
Yeah, I know. Did extensive damage to Hitler's home, Bormann's home, Goering's home, and the Hotel Dom Turken, etc.
Yeah.
But the ruins were still there until, I think it was about 10, 15 years ago, the U.S. Army pulled out, gave all that back to the Bavarian government. Man, they just couldn't stop themselves from running up there and totally demolishing everything. So
just very strange.
Yeah, but we go into the tunnels and bunkers that are under the hotel. That was the other thing I went over to Germany for, to get evidence of something else, and I'm going to be as vague as I can. The the lady that owned that hotel, Dom Turken, which is where Hitler's personal guard stayed when he was on the mountain, she died a couple of years ago under very mysterious circumstances, and her daughter inherited the hotel, and I knew the family very well. The daughter just hated the mother, but she's got the hotel now. And any of the old owner, her name was Ingrid, any of her old friends are not allowed in the hotel at all, because God knows they might talk to each other. And we have just learned that there was a last will and testament on a DVD in which Ingrid says she wants the hotel to become a foundation, you know, like we have a non-profit historical foundation here. They call it an Stiftung there. So the lawyer I was supposed to see over there about that sent me an email the day before we were supposed to meet and said, oops, can't make it. So that's another thing I'll be doing in June when I go back. Hopefully I'll visit with this guy and watch the video. See what happened to my friend. So
Yeah.
There's too many friends getting killed over there.
Well, it's kind of like they're just tying up loose ends and trying to get rid of any vestigial memories of that whole period of history.
Yeah. You know, their attitude is World War what? Adolf who?
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, you're familiar with the laws. There are certain songs you cannot sing. They're felonies if you sing them.
It's absurd.
Yeah, and if you wear a swastika in public,
absolutely,
it's a felony.
It's asinine. Unbelievable.
And you want to hear something that's really kind of cute. When I was in the Air Force, I was what they call permanent party. In other words, I was actually doing my job out of tech school. I was commanding a six-man group loading hydrogen bombs onto B-47. And some of the guys that had been there for some time, they had their own little club called the TCs. TC. I asked the guy, what does TC stand for? And he told me, Twisted Cross. At that time, it meant nothing to me, Twisted Cross.
Really?
Yeah. But in Germany, the swastika is known as the Hakenkreuz, the hooked cross.
Yeah.
So here we had a bunch of U.S. Air Force guys belonging to a club called the swastika.
That's exactly where it was.
Interesting.
How interesting. Yeah, fascinating.
Well, we don't go into that in our magazine or the books, but like we said, your listeners can go to www.sharkhunters.com, find out all sorts of stuff about shark hunters, and if they send us an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say they heard us on the show, we'll send them a complimentary
copy of one of your wonderful magazines.
Thank you. You're doing this so much better than me.
No, I'm just not quite as tired as you.
Well, yeah, I'm still fighting jet lag. And what, two days ago, I was up at what was midnight our time.
Uh-huh.
It would have been, 9 in the morning or 9 at night your time because of the time difference.
Yep.
And then up and shower and shave and have breakfast and get on the shuttle and go to the Munich airport, go through customs, and then fly all the way over here and then sit in Atlanta for a couple hours, then fly home. And my buddies picked me up, drove almost 2 hours to get home, and then I was up, you know, unpacking. So I was up almost 24 hours straight. Plus, your body clock has changed.
Oh, they play with it. Somebody's got to do away with daylight savings time, for God's sakes.
I've heard people say
unbelievably stupid.
I get up at 2 or 3 in the morning. Anyhow,
yeah.
I'm in my office way before dawn, so
right.
Don't even look at the clock. So,
right.
But anyhow, your listeners can. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what. Maybe I'm tired and punchy, but if your listeners want to order the book Hitler in Argentina within the next week, they can order it if they call or email us. We'll give them the member's price of $20 instead of $25.
Oh, that's very nice.
Still have to
it's
pay us
it
$6.
Is, it's, folks, it's one of the most important books of our age, period. It tells the truth about one of the biggest lies in modern history, and it will set you straight. And it'll cause a lot of arguments with your friends who will refuse to read the book and maintain that they're right no matter what. Forget the evidence. To hell with that. I don't know. I've got a candle lit here. I have no idea what time it is. What time does your clock say?
Well, I'm showing here on my computer at 11:46 my time, which makes it, what, 9:46 your time? Anyhow,
yeah,
about
okay.
14
we have,
minutes before the end of the show.
We have about 8 minutes.
Okay.
Something like that. Now, the other question I had was most, by 42-43, most German military production was carried out underground.
Yeah, by 43 for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, of stuff like planes and tanks.
Planes and tanks. And this is going to shock some of you. If I remember correctly, in 1945, at the end of hostilities, a monthly total of fighter planes that were built by the Germans for the Luftwaffe was something like 4,000 planes a month. They were cranking out planes. They had no fuel.
Yeah.
They had no pilots. But they sure as hell never stopped making these planes. They just continued astonishing production levels.
Yeah, and most of that was underground, as you say. There's a mountain in Thuringia province.
Yeah,
where they were building the ME-262 jet fighters inside.
I saw a documentary about that. Amazing.
Right, and then they'd slide them out and run them up the mountain on a little track, clickety click, and then take them off from a short runaway up there.
But yeah, and the runway wasn't really long enough. They flew off the end, and fortunately the updraft pulled them up, and I think they succeeded in sending off, what was it, about 100 planes, that's all. But
like you say, they had no fuel, and their stock of pilots, the same with the U-boats. Toward the end of the war, the average age of a skipper was 23.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and I remember how I was at age 23. Of course, I was out of the service by then and into college. I was still I couldn't find my butt with both hands on a road map. And prior to that, I was commanding a team of specialists loading hydrogen bombs.
Thermonuclear bombs. Yeah.
So then they were taking the experienced guys like Eric Topp and Hardegen and all these guys, taking them out of their senior position and putting them back into the boats. As a matter of fact, what was it, 2 days ago, the 18th of March, Reinhard Hardegen, the guy that sank the first ship in American waters, he just turned 102. And he still drives his Mercedes on the Autobahn.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got a picture of him in front of me here that was taken about 3 months ago. He don't look any different than the last time I saw him 15 years ago. The guy is solid.
Well, nice story.
Yeah, and we got his history, thank God. I knew all these skippers, so we got their history.
Were any of the planes, for example, whether they were the BF-109s or Messerschmitt, however you want to call it, any of the Arado bombers, were any of those taken or were they all just chopped up?
There were some Arados came over here. The BF-109s, I mean, they were plentiful as could
be. But they didn't save any of them. They just trashed them, right?
Most of them, yeah. When I was living in a suburb of Chicago, a way out suburb called Fox Lake, there was a guy in the town of Mundelein who had a farm, and he converted part of it into a museum. He had six ME-109s in crates. The Arados, they brought a couple of them back to the U.S., and Robert Cardenas, who retired as a brigadier general, I think, maybe a major general, he's the guy that flew the B-29 that dropped Chuck Yeager with the rocket planes, the Bell X-1.
Oh, yeah.
He was
the
test pilot on the Arado 234s that we brought back.
Oh, fascinating.
But,
well, they must still be around somewhere.
I think there's one Arado in the Smithsonian. I'm not sure yet. But, of course, the Smithsonian, the part you can go into and visit is only a small part. They've got huge warehouses with stuff that's not out on display. They can't display it all. Don't have the room.
Well, the guy who had the 109s in the crates, what happened to those?
Well, he also had a P-47, which was really rare because they destroyed most of those after the war.
Uh-huh.
And he had a B-25, all sorts of other stuff. Well, he was he had his own little airstrip. And he was flying over his airstrip with a buddy of his in a small plane, like a Cessna 172 or something, maybe a 152, I don't know. His buddy had a heart attack and pitched forward onto the yoke at 1,200 feet. Well, you don't recover from that. He was powered right into the ground. Bam, deader than a stick. And after that, you know, it all just got, just disappeared. Oh, he also had a Baka bomb. Baka is the Japanese word for
the Japanese, that was their V-1 version.
Yeah, the manned-guided bomb.
Yeah.
There was only, I think, 4 left in the United States, or maybe 4 left in the world, and he had one. I don't know where it went.
Well, I wonder what happened to the 109s in the crates. They might still be in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, I was, way back in the middle 1980s, mm-hmm. I had heard that they went back to the Messerschmitt Corporation in Bavaria, and if that's the case, then they're probably still there somewhere. And there's a few flying versions of it that mostly over in England, I think. They've got some that are flying. They've got some Spitfires that fly. They don't have any ME-262 jets that fly, but there are a couple of them. And there's one, only one, ME-262 two-seat night fighter, only one left in the world. And I sat in the cockpit.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of that plane.
Yeah, they had the cat whisker radar up front on the nose.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've got any of the ME-163 Comets, the rocket-powered plane. I think they're all gone. I don't know, though. But
there might be one at the Smithsonian. I think I may have seen a picture of it.
Yeah, maybe also over in the Red Army Museum or something like that. But I went through that museum with a special guide way back when it was still the Soviet Union, and I don't remember seeing anything like that.
The Focke Wulf 190, I saw one of those at an air show.
Oh, yeah.
It was all aluminum colored.
Yep.
And it was in Santa Barbara.
Mm.
And I don't know who had it, but someone flew it in there. So there's some of those around.
Yeah. There was one also in the same museum where the two-seat night fighter ME-262 was. This one had a beautifully streamlined fairing with a 37-millimeter gun under the wing for tank busting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's his name, Rudel had.
Yeah.
Rudel, who destroyed over 500 Soviet tanks.
It's just amazing technology when you think about it.
Yeah.
No computers, just man and machine.
Yeah.
Man and machine.
And he moved to South America after the war was over. Nobody was hunting him, but he reorganized the South America, or the Argentine Air Force.
Argentinian Air Force, yeah.
And saw his house when I was down there, and he had a gorgeous wife. But I guess when you're a big shot like that, you can get away with that stuff.
And well, you did.
Yeah, well, that's true, but I wasn't as famous as Rudel.
Mm-hmm.
They were best buddies with Juan and Evita Perón.
Mm-hmm. Well, you showed us pictures of them.
Yeah, and there's more in the book. There's more on the website.
Yeah.
And that's what, of course, Werner Baumbach and Adolf Galland and Rudel, they were not wanted by anybody, and so they rebuilt the whole Argentine Air Force. And because Perón got so much money from Borman when he went down there. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That was their protection. That was their guardian angel. Perón wasn't going to give them up. Nobody cared about Eichmann because Eichmann was not a wealthy guy, like I told you. And then it's in the book, too. He rode a bus 3 hours each way to his job in a factory.
That's amazing.
Mercedes
yeah.
factory, right?
Yeah.
So he had no protection.
And, we know so little about all this, the average American. They don't even know the difference between World War I and World War II, Harry.
Oh, boy.
The average younger person, they don't know. They don't even know what Vietnam was, let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, Japan was our ally in World War I and our enemy
yeah.
in World War II. It all depends
yeah.
on where the money is, I guess. World War II, they had the money in the oil and stuff, and major industries. The United States
yeah.
Navy jumped from being a backwater navy to being the most huge, most powerful, the best navy the world had ever seen. And the Air Force, too. We didn't even have an Air Force. We had the Army Air Corps, then it became the Army Air Force, and then in, 1949, I think it was, they broke away and became their own branch, U.S. Air Force. So, and a lot of the stuff we had, as you'll find out in one of the two books, either Hitler in Argentina or Hitler and the Secret Alliance, I can't remember which, that's how we got our nuclear weapons program jump-started.
That's right.
Right around the time Hitler allegedly committed suicide.
Yeah.
And we picked up all sorts of stuff. Stuff that they haven't even announced yet.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier. There's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how much will be let go. And what's the point of even holding on to it at this stage in the game? It doesn't make any sense.
My guess on that is that they held it for a long time till people weren't interested, like you say. They're just not interested. And now, why they don't release it, I don't think anybody even cares about it. You know, the average government slug goes to work. He's, 28 to 45 years old. He doesn't even know World War II. He doesn't know where all this stuff is. And he doesn't know he should look for stuff and declassify it. The only reason all these FBI files on Hitler's escape got declassified is one of our guys, who is he's a cop, spent, 7 years ago, I guess, 6 years, about 3 weeks, 12 hours a day, I think, in the National Archives, digging out all these dusty old boxes full of files, finding the ones that had to do with Hitler escaping, and got them declassified for us. Otherwise, I think they'd still be sitting in the dusty old boxes.
No doubt.
Archivists were shocked that they even had them.
Funny. Well, we have a whole treasury of paperworks, posters, books, memorabilia, you name it, from Germany, over here in warehouses, locked up.
Yeah.
Probably never to see the light of day again.
Fine art, too.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard something like 20,000 or 200,000 pieces of fine art that were, quote, seized from the Nazis, unquote.
Right.
And
no effort made to find their original owners either.
No, they're sitting in a warehouse where the Ark of the Covenant that Indiana Jones found is stored.
Mm-hmm. All right. Where's our time so I don't run
know.
Too late?
Sharkhunters.com.
What time is it?
I'm looking at the clock here. It says 11:59.
Oh, we got to run.
Oop, it just rolled over to 12 o'clock.
Yeah. We're over at 55, actually.
Okay. So. Well, I guess my Corvette's going to turn into a pumpkin.
Go to sleep.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good talking to you again, Pat.
Talk soon, Harry. Take care.
Righto. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, that's hour number two. We're going to run into our break, and then we'll run right back out on the other side with David John Oates with some reverse speech newsmakers from Australia coming up next.